Arkansas's history of race relations is, shall we agree, mixed at best. Slavery, Central High School's difficulty with integration, lynchings, and the tragic deaths of 21 young African-American men locked in a correctional facility in 1936 all received, understandably, national attention. The state's past and present regarding race and ethnicity is more nuanced than just those examples, of course. And a recent book published by the University of Arkansas Press uses 12 essays by 12 different authors to begin to examine the various aspects of the issue. Race and Ethnicity in Arkansas, New Perspectives was edited by John A. Kirk, the George W. Donaghy Professor and Chair of the History Department at the University of Arkansas Little Rock. Last week, he discussed the book and its essays with Ozarks at Large, including a conversation about the third chapter of the book that details a lesser-known era in the state's history, when many African Americans left other southern states to seek land ownership, beginning in the late 19th century.
Of course, it talks about when Arkansas was a frontier state in the late 19th century. And really, you know, it was on the margins of the South at the time. It bridged, really, the Old South with the New West. And many African Americans, after emancipation, looked towards the West, but also looked towards Arkansas because it was both familiar and new territory where there were new opportunities opening up, and was seen as a place that was close enough to access, but that had new traditions and new opportunities, particularly the opportunity to gain land that brought thousands of African Americans from other southern states into Arkansas as a land of opportunity. And for a short period, it was. Reconstruction and its impact lasted longer in Arkansas than many other southern states. But that, as story explains, tapered off into the early decades of the 20th century. And also, kind of interestingly, the extension of story's piece is that between 1940 and 1970, Arkansas lost more of its African-American population than any other state. So it's kind of interesting that there's a big influx into Arkansas in the late 19th, early 20th century. But the disillusionment that grows from that leads to also another mass exodus out of Arkansas in later decades. So it's a fascinating part of the demographics of the state, of how it gains a large black population at a certain period and then how it loses that population. So Arkansas is a kind of gateway to the West, often has people going through it and receives migrations, but also has large migrations too.
Yeah, and there's a reoccurring theme in many of these essays that is initial optimism that is then just squashed, and particularly in this essay where there are African Americans who are not going to Arkansas because they think it's necessarily a more tolerant place, but just because there is more land to be bought, and there's a new potential chapter here, and as you say, you know, that optimism, whatever optimism there is or hope, is diminished, and diminished quickly and severely.
Mm. Yeah, Arkansas often tends to lag behind the rest of the South and the rest of the nation because it is one on the far-flung edges of the South. It is kind of odd in that it straddles the South and the West. And it takes a while for the trends that follow in the rest of the South to catch up with Arkansas, but also the conditions that follow it and the political conditions kind of lag behind as well. So Arkansas is often out of step with a lot of other states, and therefore people see it being an advance and therefore move there and attracted by it. But of course, ultimately, the other events that are happening elsewhere eventually catch up with Arkansas, and when they do, then people move on again. So Arkansas is kind of interesting in that there's often a lag, and it's often out of step with other states. So it makes an interesting case study in that sense, as something that's in some ways often fairly distinct from what's going on in other parts of the South at the time.
I'm talking with John A. Kirk. He is the editor of the new book, Race and Ethnicity in Arkansas New Perspectives, published by the University of Arkansas Press. This, of course, covers the entire geography of Arkansas. There are a couple of chapters that really hone in on the listening area for Ozarks at Large. One about sundown towns, which were more typically found in what are called non-traditional southern towns, the mountain towns of the Ozarks, and Guy Lancaster writes about that. And then Jacqueline Froelich, who, of course, is a contributor on Ozarks at Large, works here. The work she has done about Harrison and how that town continues to try to figure out what its role is with this horrible history that it has.
Yeah, although, you know, one of the things that Guy's work does is to point out that Sundown towns were really scattered throughout the state, and they weren't only a Northwest Arkansas event, an occurrence. So, they, you know, Sundown towns are kind of interestingly scattered around the state and often appear in places where you don't expect to see them. But certainly many of them were in towns with sparse African-American populations, and that fits the profile of the Ozarks. And it was often, you know, those places which had small black populations, which were very vulnerable to those kinds of sweeps, and a particular event or a particular occurrence could lead to a massive expulsion, a mass expulsion of the African-American community. So those places in particular were vulnerable to those kinds of events.
One thing that comes through in Sundown towns and much of this book is, if you are an Arkansan, this is not always a very easy or welcome read.
Not at all. And, you know, that's another part of Arkansas's interest in identity, I think, is this bridge between the South and the West, that Arkansas itself has often played with that. And at certain times, it's aligned itself solidly with the solid South. In fact, that's the very phrase that Orville Forbes used when he made his stand at Central High. He said that in terms of race, Arkansas stood solidly with the solid South and aligned it very much as a Southern state, allied to the rest of the South, and that it had part of that heritage. But at the same time, it has looked towards the West. And at times of pressure on race relations and ethnic relations, when the attention has been focused on it, it will also turn around and say, actually, we're not a Southern state at all. We're a Western state. There's no real reason to look here. We shouldn't be subject to the same laws that the rest of the South is subject to. For example, you know, in the Voting Rights Act, Arkansas is one of those states that's initially exempted from the Voting Rights Act because it says, well, we're not part of the South. There's nothing to see here. So it plays a kind of interesting role in the state. And, of course, the state is very steeped in the history of race and the history of Southern race relations and has that aspect to it. But also at the same time, one of the things unique about Arkansas, as we were saying earlier, is that it's lost a lot of its African-American population. So the African-American population has tended to drop, and now it's just over 15% of the population. It used to be closer to a quarter, and even more further back you go. So it's kind of fascinating in the demographics of the state that as the African-American population has shrunk, that memory and the writing of race and ethnicity in Arkansas, the possibilities of doing that have kind of shrunk with it too. So it's really important for the state to understand its identity, I think, to understand its place and the history of race and ethnicity deeply rooted in its past and how that evolved. And, of course, in some kinds of different ways today, it's equally important. But it's something that Arkansans often overlook, and in part because the history of the civil rights movement, the history of race and ethnicity in Arkansas has been underwritten, apart from the school crisis, people kind of fixate upon those specific events without really necessarily having much context to locate them within. And part of the purpose of the book and part of the purpose of my extended research has been to provide that bigger history of race and ethnicity in Arkansas so that people do have a broader context in which to locate those kind of major national episodes like the Little Rock school crisis.
You know, this book is worth picking up and reading if someone only reads one of the 12 essays, and that is Griff Stockley, who's written about this and talked about this incident before, but the 1959 fire at what was called the Arkansas Negro Boys Industrial School, and how that was, for a time, a lightning rod, just like Central High was for Arkansas, when so many young African-American men lost their lives in a very, very horrible way.
Yes, and that happened so close to the school crisis, and yet it's something that is very distant from those events. And it's a different kind of story that Griff paints. You know, one of the things that he lays out in that chapter is the way that what we might call today structural racism has been an enduring factor in the state, and how that fits in with the more common story of Jim Crow and desegregation, all those kinds of things. We often focus on those flashpoint events like school desegregation and those kinds of changes, but Griff really shines a spotlight on institutional racism and how that worked, and the boys' school, the fire at the boys' school, and how that's related to segregation in the South and the separate facilities that they had in the South and how unequal those facilities were, and that led to tragedies like this that on the face of it you might say it's just an unfortunate incident. But Griff does a great job in untangling this story and showing how the death of those boys was not just an unfortunate incident but a consequence of the racial disparities that exist in the state, the way that African Americans were treated differently, the way that African American institutions were underfunded, the way that those institutions were really ignored from oversight by many in the white power structure in the state's history. So Griff tells a story about the Jim Crow period, but in a different kind of way, outside of that normal framework of desegregation and inside a more familiar contemporary framework of institutional racism, but casting that framework back into the past and showing that that institutional racist framework that we talk about today has its roots in the Jim Crow era and way back beyond then. So it's a way of uncovering a different kind of racial past that's very much allied to today and very much connected to today that we often overlook when we look at that traditional civil rights narrative of segregation to desegregation. There's much more to the story than that. There's much more beyond the story than that. And a lot of the essays kind of tackle those stories that move beyond that traditional civil rights narrative that exists both nationally, regionally, and within the state.
Most of what we've talked about so far, understandably, has been about the African-American experience in Arkansas. But the last quarter of the book is much more contemporary and talks about Latinas, Latinos, Asians who are now living in Arkansas. And I, you know, you can see volume two, volume three of this book when you consider Vietnamese people of Vietnamese heritage in Fort Smith or the thriving Marshallese population in Springdale. I mean, the diversity continues and shifts and changes.
It does. And one of the things that I really like about the book and that I'm proud that we got to include in there are essays that tackle Latino history in Arkansas and Asian American history in Arkansas. Because often when you talk about race and ethnicity in the state, you're talking about black-white relations. And of course, there's a long, important founding part of race and ethnicity, bounding that relationship from slavery through to Jim Crow to the civil rights era. But the composition of Arkansas and the issues of race and ethnicity don't stay static. They change over time. And more recently, the influx of the Latino population, particularly to the northwest part of Arkansas, which has one of the largest growing Latino populations in the country, is changing the complexion of that part of the state too. But the essays in the book, I think, talk about that. But also, for example, Julie Weiss's piece on the Bracero program in Arkansas points to the fact that Latinos have a long history in the state. The Latino immigrant labor has been coming to the state from the 1950s, 60s onwards. That Latinos were picking cotton in the fields of East Arkansas, which people don't really kind of remember and think about, Latino population and Latino history in that way within the state. So it really does a good job, I think, in tracing the backstory to Latino immigration. It shows that recent events have a long history in their own right, and that Latinos have been in the state for many years doing many different kinds of things in different ways than we think of them in a contemporary context.
You mentioned recent events. You can't read this book and not think about, you know, what, twice in the last few weeks we've had conversations about Robert E. Lee and the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday being on the same day and people coming to the Capitol explaining why it shouldn't be separated. You can't help but think about billboards that are still put up in Harrison that may not represent the majority of that town, but still are, you know, blatantly offensive to many people and many people would call racist. While there's a history of race and ethnicity in Arkansas, there are very much contemporary times dealing with these issues as well.
Yeah, and it's still as relevant today as it ever was. In some ways in the same way, in some ways in different ways. And I think one of the important parts of exploring a history of race and ethnicity in Arkansas is to give context to today and what we're facing today, because what we're facing today and the issues we face today are very much rooted in our past. And if we don't really understand the past fully, if we don't understand how we got here in the first place, it's very difficult to work through the issues that we face now. So a lot of those are steeped in the past, and it's kind of fascinating how Arkansans deal with race and ethnicity, I think. You know, one of the fascinating things is that often when you talk about issues of race and ethnicity, people say, oh, that's all in the past. We shouldn't be dealing with that now. We should just move on. We should do something else. We should do something different. We should forget about that. We should all just move on as if we're equal from the present stance. But, of course, debates like the Robert E. Lee, Martin Luther King Day, at the same time, those people who are saying we should forget about the past, we should just move on, we should forget that, are very deeply invested in that past and are going back to that past themselves. So there's a kind of interesting juxtaposition there between people who say, oh, let's just forget about the past, let's forget all that happened, let's move on. And clearly people who are very vested in that past and who want to remember that past at the same time. So it's a very complex, contradictory kind of notion of whether we should go back and explore the past and whether we can learn from that or whether we should just ignore the past altogether. I think ultimately you can't really go forwards from where we are now because without understanding the past, because if we don't understand how we got here, there's no way of moving forward and thinking through the things about how we got here in the first place. And it's crucial in any kind of thinking about how we move forward in race and ethnicity in the state to think deeply about how we got here, those debates that have already shaped the contemporary debates today and the developments that have happened that allow us to be the state we are. And until we understand that, until we can contextualize contemporary race and ethnic problems within a larger historical perspective, it's difficult to understand what's going on now. And it's certainly difficult to understand and think about how we're going to move from here going on to the future without making the same mistakes if we don't remember the mistakes we made in the first place.
John A. Kirk is the George W. Donaghy Professor and Chair of the History Department at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. He is the editor of several books, including the newest, Race and Ethnicity in Arkansas New Perspectives, published by the University of Arkansas Press. John, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. A pleasure.